As we begin our meditation, it's really helpful to be setting an intention or a aspiration, mainly in terms of setting a tone or a mood. For the mind, for the heart, for the practice, and but I think also keeping it fairly simple and straightforward, just to setting a aspiration. May I be truly happy? May I be truly peaceful. Those are, of course, deep aspirations of the heart, and it's helpful to clarify them, because sometimes we clutter the mind up with a lot of doing a lot of get enmeshed in the machinations of the mind, and just to remember that the whole purpose of this practice, the whole purpose of our being here, is this wish for happiness, for well-being, for peace, and if that is our goal and our aspiration, then what we bring to it has to kind of mesh with that, in the sense that if we're making ourselves miserable sitting in meditation, then it's hard to fit that in with the goal of seeking happiness. So to it's fairly simple, but it's something that's easily overlooked and easily justified when we get trapped into particular moods and layers of complication that our mind can throw up. So that setting that intention and stopping from time to time during the meditation to recollect that, to bring that to mind. As I've mentioned before, I tend to give a lot of the instruction in meditation is usually around mindfulness of breathing. But if people have their own practices that they're doing, that's fine. It's more the trying to pay attention to the principles underlying the instruction, the ways of trying to establish a sense, because that's what the instructions and the guidelines for any meditation method is to help us to develop and implement the aspects of mindfulness, alertness, clear comprehension, reflection, investigation, whichever vehicle feels comfortable for one, then to be able to pursue that, but then also to be recollecting what are those underlying principles. think one of the things that is also helpful to recollect is that we practice meditation and develop this practice to support and facilitate an opportunity for the mind to become more agile, bringing a kind of agility and flexibility into the mind. The tendency of the mind is to retreat into things that are sort of known or comfortable, or one feels a bit of security around, and there tends to be a lack of flexibility sometimes. And so keeping the mind alert and agile, and particularly with the meditation object, in the sense of breathing in, paying attention, but not sort of locking in a rigid way, but softening and feeling I mean, it's interesting in the Buddha's instruction for mindfulness of breathing. The words that he, the verbs that he uses, most of them have are focused more on a experience. As opposed to seeing or watching, because we do when we in the language how we articulate and think about things, oftentimes there's to watch the breath, or to watch the mind, or to see the mind, and those are. They have a validity, but they also have certain connotations. And there's a subtle way that we set up a sense of me, the watcher, and that which is being watched. Me, the seer, that which is being seen. And it's just if we use the language, we think of it in that way, but there is a certain distancing that happens, and when we reflect on the language that the Buddha uses, he uses the more experience based, in a sense of training oneself. Breathing in long, say one trains oneself, breathing in long, one knows one breathes in long. Breathing out long, one knows one breathes out long. And this is a training. The word that the Buddha uses is sikkhati. And it's actually used all through that mindfulness of breathing discourse. Verb sikkhati. Sikkhati means to train, to learn, to educate oneself even. So that training oneself, being engaged in the process, breathing in long, one is engaged in the process of recognizing it, knowing it, understanding it. Again, the verb that the Buddha uses, pajhanati, which is to know, to understand, to discern. So it's like one is engaged in it so that one understands it clearly. Breathing in long, one understands, I breathe in long. Breathing out long, I understand, I'm breathing out long. One trains oneself in this way, breathing in short. One understands. Breathing in short, breathing out short. One understands. One's breathing out short, and that. I mean, these are very. This is the first. And when the Buddha gives his instructions in mindfulness of breathing, the structure that he gives is in 16 aspects of mindfulness of breathing, and they correspond to the four foundations of mindfulness, so that the first four are concerned with the body, next four concerned with feeling, next four concerned with the mind, the last four concerned with dhammas or phenomena. And so that the Buddha is tying in this practice of mindfulness of breathing with the foundations of mindfulness. And these are ways that we can establish our attention. And also when we reflecting on these 16 aspects of mindfulness of breathing, we can pick up any at any point in that process and work with it, whatever is interesting to one, which is has one's attention. It isn't. It's not like a point A, point B. You've got to get that first step before you can go on to the next step, and then you have to go through it step by step, all the way through until you reach the end, and then you get a certificate. It's not how it works. It's sort of these are. Entry points, and of course, when we have these different entry points, but then we also we have the opportunity of accessing the whole range of our experience, what we experience in terms of the body, how we experience things in terms of feeling, how we experience things in terms of the mind, how we experience things in terms of Dhamma or of phenomena. And all of those are bases of insight, and one can work with it in many, many, many different ways. And again, I think that sense of using this is a template that we have, or a tool that we have, and we can use it in many different ways, depending on how what makes sense to us, what works, what we feel comfortable, what we find helpful, and that opportunity also to develop an agility and flexibility, picking up these different aspects of the mindfulness of breathing and experimenting with it, seeing what resonates, what feels helpful. The Buddha himself, one time he was on retreat. He didn't go alms round, didn't have the meal with the community, and Ananda, his attendant, would bring his food to him. And after being on retreat for a period of time, The Buddha was talking with Ananda and said, you know, what, you know, how would you answer if people asked you, what is the Buddha doing on retreat? What's he practicing? What's his meditation? And of course the Buddha says, and how would you answer that? And Ananda says, well, you know, I leave it to you to tell me, as the Buddha said. Just tell them that the Buddha is, that Tathagata is practicing mindfulness of breathing. that sense of mindfulness of breathing as something the Buddha himself took the time, even after his enlightenment, to maintain, to continue to develop, and to delight in. And using the body as a foundation, that sense of, again, paying attention to experiencing, as opposed to just a passive watching. One's engaging in the process of mindfulness and breathing. It isn't just a watching and waiting for something to happen. You're engaging in that process of awareness, of alertness, and breathing in long, breathing out long, breathing in short, breathing out short. Then the Buddha said, experiencing the whole body, one breathes in. Experiencing the whole body, one breathes out. And that the word that the Buddha uses is, of course, it's been debated over millennia, but it's reasonably clear, I think, in the original Pali, that it's really about the body as opposed to the body of the breath, and because then it gets too precise, too pared down. I think the Buddha is giving the encouragement to inhabit the body while one is training and practicing. Experiencing is the verb that the Buddha uses. Ajahn Jeff translates it as sensitive to the whole body, one breathes in. Sensitive to the whole body, one breathes out. And there, the root of the verb that the Buddha uses is the same root as vedana, feeling. So that sense of feeling, experiencing, being sensitive to the whole body, and of course one can be exploring that in so many different ways, paying attention to the sensation, to the rhythm, to the feeling of the body, the ease or the discomfort of the body, whether the body feels constricted or expansive, whether it's light or heavy, but being sensitive to, experiencing, exploring, grounding one's experience in the body. There's a very practical reason for that, in the sense of that Of course, the body is the most, say, the heaviest, most tangible basis of our experience. So that as we begin to practice, being able to clarify our mindfulness, our alertness, using that which is tangible, solid, and using the body in order to facilitate those aspects of how do we keep the mind alert? How do we experience the body? So experiencing the body, the whole body, I breathe in. Experiencing the whole body, I breathe out. How do I be present with that? How do I help that? How do I have the agility and flexibility to not just get lost in either a painful feeling or a pleasant feeling, or to drift with the way the mind tends to float off, and to really make the kind of the body one's home. It's like that bumper sticker I saw in Berkeley several years ago. If I lived in my body, I'd be home by now. which is really apt. Breathing in, breathing out, living in this body. The next step of the and the last one concerning the body is the calming or settling the bodily formations. I breathe in, calming, settling the bodily formations. I breathe out. And the bodily formation in this sense is the breath itself. One can certainly apply that to the whole body and pay attention to the calming, settling of the physical body. But this is a process of starting to refine the attention and tuning in to the breath as it like within the bodily experience, that calming the word in the Pali language is kaya sankara, and translated bodily formation, body conditioner is another translation Ajahn Buddhadasa uses, and I think that's really helpful. Because when we tune into the breath and we are consciously calming and settling the breath, the rest of the body can be at ease. The rest of the body can almost like melt around the experience of the breath. So the breath experience of the breath starts to stand out, and then the body, as one has relaxed and settled it, relaxes and almost melts around the sensation of the breath. Very comfortable. So paying attention to how to try to bring about that ease. And it ties into that very first aspiration that one sets. So may I be truly happy. May I be truly peaceful. These are tangible ways of being able to fulfill that aspiration. the Buddha then goes on to the next and a section, and which is there's a tetrad, sections of four, and the next section is on feeling, and the first one is experiencing joy. I breathe in, experiencing joy. I breathe out. And the Buddha is actually giving us permission to meditate and experience a sense of well-being, ease, joy, rapture, however one wants to translate it. These are aspects of feeling which we can be learning to access and to get to give ourselves permission to experience a quality of joy in the simplicity of training the human heart. Because usually we, you know, there's so many perceptions and memories and associations and the no pain, no gain motto, the diligent Protestant work ethic, just sort of strive away but be miserable while you're doing it. But it isn't the Buddha's approach. Experiencing well-being, experiencing joy, experiencing a sense of the word in Pali is bhiti. There's an exhilaration of mind, exhilaration of heart, breathing in and breathing out. And, you know, when we drop a lot of the agendas of doing and striving and getting and gaining, and the tyranny of our self-perceptions, just opening up opportunities for experiencing this quality of joy and facilitating that, experiencing it. Experiencing happiness, I breathe in. Experiencing happiness, I breathe out. And this is the next aspect that the Buddha points to. And there's a... In the language the Buddha used, there's slight differences in the the word bhiti for joy, sukha for happiness. Bhiti is like an exhilaration of mind. That's what the bhiti is oftentimes when one experiences this. Yes, systems, you know, kind of exhilaration, tears of joy can happen. And sukha is a bit more settled, a bit more bodily oriented, because there's the same kind of happiness and lightness of heart, but it's also a bit more grounded in the bodily experience. It's sort of pervading the body. So experiencing happiness, I breathe in. Experiencing happiness, I breathe out. The third aspect is experiencing the mental formations. I breathe in. experiencing mental formations. I breathe out. Mental formations in this in the Pali citta sankhara and or the mind conditioners is another way of looking at it. And they what the Buddha is pointing to here is what conditions the mind conditions the movement of mind is feeling and perception. So that there's the and these are kind of automatic. There, every mental state has feeling and perception, and it's not a volitional activity. It's not you're not formulating it. You're not creating it. These are underlying aspects of experience. Every mental state will have a feeling tone to it, whether it's pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral, and there'll be a perception, that quality of memory, association, kind of allocating a kind of a value to it in some way. That's the function of perception. But that it's happening automatically, so that experiencing that, because those that's where the thoughts rise out of. That's where the movement of mind rises out of, that experience of feeling and perception. So that to experience that, recognize it, because when we something that is not seen and understood will exert a power over us that we're not really, we don't understand. We don't, how did I get here? What happened? But when we see that more clearly, experiencing these mind conditioners, then we get a much better handle on what the content of our mind, what's spinning out, what's arising. And then the last part of that is the calming or settling the citta sankhara, the mind conditioners, the mental formations, so that by that process of making, experiencing it, recognizing it, and then breathing in, calming the mind conditioners, I breathe in, calming the mind conditioners, I breathe out. One's bringing in that the conscious rhythm, conscious attention to the rhythm of the breath, but holding those conditioning factors of the mind as a base of that experience, and being sensitive to it. And again, that's Ajahn Chah, sensitive to the mental conditioners, mental formations. And that as one is sensitive to that, one as one's experiencing it, calming it, bringing a sense of calm. And it isn't forcing or pushing or making it be calm, doing the calming. It's sort of the actual paying attention to that rhythm of the breath, making, and then just setting that intention of calm, of settling, so that within that sphere of attention and awareness, one is allowing everything to settle. You know, one's work, grounding one's experience in the body, bringing it in to the experience of on the feeling tone, on that kind of the feeling the really basic ways that the mind experiences things. Is it pleasant? Is it unpleasant? Is it neutral? What's the association around it? And calming that. And then what will happen is when those conditioners are being settled or being calmed, then the mind itself starts to calm, to settle. It's a natural result. And the Buddha, moves on to the next tetrad, and the first one being experiencing the mind. Citta pati sangveti, so that citta as the word that's used for the mind, and which is in the Buddha's conception of it, the mind is both the thinking mind and the emotional mind. Those are not mind, heart are interposable. They're not distinct. They're not distinct functions. So then, experiencing the mind. What's going on in the mind? What is the experience of the mind? Is it clear? Is it not clear? Is it being swayed by movement? Is it very still? It's the recognizing what that experience of mind is. And the next is the gladdening the mind. I breathe in, gladdening the mind, I breathe out. Pamodayam, which is a quality, the quality of pamoja is a quality of delight. Delighting the mind, I breathe in. Delighting the mind, I breathe out. Taking the time to infuse the mind with these, the mind, the heart, with this quality of gladness, of well-being. Development of the practice is one. There is a goal of happiness and well-being, but it is also what we rely on as a basis for our continued development and maturation. So that making that conscious, and I think this, as we see the Buddha's instructions, I think it's important for us to recognize that we have permission to feel good about our practice. That's actually an insight that the Buddha himself had. I think it's a very human quality. The Buddha relates when he was still an unenlightened bodhisattva striving for realization. And he's meditating and practicing. Of course, he's putting tremendous amount of effort into different ascetic practices. And at one point, he's experiencing kind of a happiness and bliss in his meditation and practice. And of course, And he has the thought, why am I afraid of this happiness? Maybe this happiness is the path, or is a part of the path. And then he has this realization, it is. This is completely wholesome. You know, why am I afraid of something that is completely wholesome? It's completely innocent. And so then it realized, oh yes, you know, these aspects of when there is a happiness that arises, that it isn't. It's not greed. It's not just seeking gratification. It's not. There's nothing. There's no downside to it. So then, this needs to be cultivated. That was the point where the Buddha relinquished his ascetic practices, and he said, in order to experience and sustain this well-being, my body actually needs to be in better shape than this scrawny, withered-up thing that his body had become. So that recognition of that, these aspects of well-being, of gladdening, of delighting, if we feel too good about practice, we start to feel guilty. Maybe I'm doing something wrong. And it's not the case. And that's why it's important to really have that clarity, experiencing the body, experiencing feeling, experiencing the mind. So you start to recognize, well, what is wholesome and what is unwholesome? What is wholesome is to be cultivated, is to be supported, is to be nurtured, is to be nourished. And if it is unwholesome, okay, we need to work at relinquishing and letting go. But these aspects of gladdening and delighting are a part of the path. They're a part of the tools that we have. The next aspect is settling the mind. Settling the mind, establishing the mind firmly. I breathe in, establishing the mind firmly. I breathe out. And this is, as the mind is buoyed up and expansive with well-being, and one needs to settle it, because when there is that exhilaration, one can also one can get excited about it, and then the mind needs to be settled so that it can become increasingly clear, because the stillness of the mind is where we can see things in their true nature. It's when it isn't that we figure it all out on an intellectual level. It is known and understood because it's right there in front of one, and because of the stillness and clarity of the mind. So that settling and firmly establishing the mind, and then releasing the mind. I breathe in, releasing the mind, I breathe out. So that recognizing anything which is still an obstacle, which is still a hindrance, which is still something that's creating a dissonance within the heart, within the mind, and just releasing, gently releasing, gently letting go, allowing the mind to continue to settle. The last part that the Buddha points to is the aspects of Dhamma, of phenomena, and in paying attention to the first verbs that the Buddha uses is anupassī, which is to like to contemplate, to investigate, so that anicca anupassī, contemplating impermanence, I breathe in, contemplating impermanence, I breathe out, so that recognition of impermanence, of change, of uncertainty, of what is inconstant, and one breathes in. Of course, the breathing itself is inconstant. It's changing. And that is pointing to this fundamental nature of change, of impermanence. And so Debbie brought up yesterday, anicca vata sankhara. All conditioned things are impermanent, and every aspect of the body, every aspect of the mind, everything internal, everything external, is a sankhara. It's a conditioned phenomena, and it's impermanent. And it's being able to bring that in, to train with that, to experience that, and that is where the mind, the heart, is really willing to let go when it sees that change, that uncertainty, that impermanence. There's a very beautiful story of the it's in the Tarigata of the Bhikkhuni Pattachara. And she describes her her enlightenment, and is conditioned by she's coming back from being on her walking meditation path, and she's going into her dwelling place, and in India at that time, and in the forest monasteries in Thailand, you usually have a little bucket of water at the steps of your dwelling place, and that's where you wash your feet before going into a dwelling place. And she takes a dipper of water and pours it over her feet to wash them. And as she's washing her feet, then there's the trickles of water going away from the pad that she's been washing her feet on. Trickles of water going out and disappearing into the ground, and just that was the seed for it. This impermanence, this uncertainty, this change, and what was there is disappearing. And she went into her dwelling place, sat in meditation, and the words that she used is like, in the same way one plucks out the wick of a candle or a lamp to put it out. Plucking out the last bits of attachment to the heart so the heart could be free. And very beautiful. And so that, but conditioned by that perception of anicca, of impermanence. It's a doorway into the truths that lead to liberation. The next aspect that the Buddha points to is viraga anupassī, so the contemplating dispassion, contemplating, another way of translating it is fading away. So a fading away of that kind of passion, excitement, agitation surrounding either the external world or the internal world of self. Just attending to, contemplating that fading away. And because in that fading away, that's where the peace is. That's where sort of like Ajahn Chah said, that's our real home. That's our, we tend to, look for places to be, exist, to become, all over the place, and we forget our real home. Our real home is that place of peace within the heart, that fading away dispassion. It's a doorway into that. Nirodha anupassī, contemplating cessation, contemplating ending. So that Nirodha is a cooling, a settling, paying attention to the endings of things and realizing that it's not intimidating, it's not fearful, it's okay for things to end, and you can be there. Because any kind of ending usually is accompanied with our desperate clamoring to do something, be something else. So just paying attention to those endings. And the last quality that the Buddha points to is a contemplating relinquishment. One breathes in, contemplating relinquishment, one breathes out. And the relinquishment in this sense is a relinquishment of self, a relinquishment of that self position, the I, me, mine, it's not just a kind of whisper in the backdrop of consciousness. It's sort of, it's oftentimes screaming at us, I, me, mine. So that's learning how I can relinquish that. I can let that go. And not only can I let it go, it actually feels good. It sort of feels good not to carry that around. Relinquishment, that's another way of actually being happy. So these aspects of mindfulness of breathing, they're, as I was saying, the Buddha lines it up from 1 to 16, body, feeling, mind, phenomena. In working with it, one can experiment and developing that agility and flexibility in working with the mind in this practice, grounding it in experience and seeing what works. And what'll work today or this week or this month will be different than what works next month, next year. And as I've certainly found for myself, mindfulness of breathing, it still feels fresh to me after 40 years of practice. I just don't see it as really being exhaustible. Okay, so we can sit quietly for a bit and then we'll go on to a walking period.